The subject is wisdom. And you have been doing special meditation practice and bhatis. And as we heard in the song from Lucinda, love, peace, and wisdom. There are many elements to wisdom, and it is quite a deep secret for a person to actually reach a stage known as wise. Generally speaking, it is said that you go through life, you learn things, you develop practical experience, and by the time you are old, then hopefully you are wise. Some people simply get old, and some people get wise. One of the dharmas that Baba is talking to us about frequently is this instruction. Do not give sorrow and do not take sorrow. And in conventional morality, it is often mentioned that we should not give sorrow. Even then, we find the accumulation of sorrow, people giving sorrow, and then those who are given sorrow, they take sorrow. So the general overall amount of sorrow in this world is increasing, and proportionately the wisdom level is decreasing. So I feel there is a connection between the acquisition of wisdom and the application of this instruction to not give sorrow or to not take sorrow. And I think that it's a very interesting barometer. If you have spiritual power, then only you will be able to neither give sorrow nor take sorrow. Whenever you experience some test and you have insufficient spiritual power, then either you will give sorrow or you will take sorrow. But there will definitely be one or the other. Now, some people, they feel that, well, it's very important not to give sorrow, but it's okay to take sorrow. So then they will take sorrow, which causes the soul to lose spiritual power. Just as much as giving sorrow causes the soul to accumulate debt or negative energy. So I think that wisdom is definitely a natural product of the accumulation of power. And if we look at the eight powers that Baba has given to us, we find that if we really have them, then only we will not give sorrow, we will not take sorrow. We give sorrow by being reactive to something that we find intolerable. Or either we give out to somebody else or we take it into ourselves. So the lack of tolerance is a sign of lack of wisdom. But we will say, well, if I can't, then what to do? And Baba will say, well, you practice until you can. So what is involved in that practice? The practice to be really able to accumulate those powers. And how long will we wait until we are insisting to ourselves that, okay, self, now it's about time to be wise. What do you feel? Do you think that it's about time to be wise? Yes? No? Yes. Not very loud voices. This is a two-way traffic. So now, what is yoga? If you think yoga is simply sitting in silence, in the right pose, and with your face directed towards the right picture, that's only on a physical level, but it's not really yoga. This is sometimes called Gyan Yoga or Buddhi Yoga. There are many words for Raj Yoga, but Gyan Yoga and Buddhi Yoga are very much part of it. So Gyan Yoga means the yoga of knowledge, Buddhi Yoga, the yoga of the intellect. And the powers are accumulated in the soul. Where exactly? Where do you keep your powers? Sometimes your powers are considered to be weapons. When you see the statues of the goddesses and you see they have the eight arms, and in those eight arms you see these different weapons. Have you seen those? You must have seen. And some of the weapons are connected with the idea of instruments of violence, like a trident or a sword or a shield. Usually the goddesses have a bowl of blood, which is where they collect the blood from the heads they have chopped off. I'm not quite sure what they do with that blood, but anyway, it's fairly bloodthirsty. And then there are other weapons which are a very different type. For example, one is a flower, the lotus flower. One is the rosary. You see, and the lotus and the rosary are not generally considered as weapons of violence. The discus, as usually the deities have the discus of self-realization, with which you can cut off heads of different vices. But to use other weapons like a flower or a lotus or even the hand of blessing, that is also considered to be a weapon. So they're called weapons or they're called ornaments. So an ornament is also considered something which decorates you, which makes you beautiful, and which indicates your value. So in the deities, this combination of weapons that are generally associated with violence and then weapons which can be more like simply ornaments, which are nothing to do with violence, they're very soft things. Now these powers are acquired over time. Of course, each and every one of us, when we do our 7 days course and we receive the information about the eight powers through yoga, generally we say, well, that's very nice, but how are these things powers, you know? And as you continue with the path of yoga, you gradually realize the extent to which you do not have those powers. Is this true? Because once you start on the path of yoga, of course there's an initial period which sometimes we may call the honeymoon period. So the honeymoon period is where everything is looking wonderful and marvelous and fantastic, and your yoga works beautifully and you experience light and might and divine insight and all those good things. And then Maya somehow notices you and begins the process of taking you down and taking you out. And if we do not keep up with that, then we would say, well, this is someone who hasn't really understood. You've taken the word easy Raj Yoga to mean it's okay to be lazy. And Baba had mentioned in the Murali that anyway you're lazy, and Maya makes you more lazy. So being lazy is a lack of wisdom. Sometimes Baba gives us the title Shurveer. Have you heard this word before, Shurveer? Shurveer is the warrior, the great, serious warrior. And in the Lokic world, if you are having that role to be a warrior, there are two things you do as a warrior. Either you're in combat or you're in training. And there's no third thing. So those who are serious warriors, they're like that. And it's actually quite a good analogy for us. Because either Maya will give some kind of attack, or you're not under attack, and therefore you have time to actually reinforce your readiness for combat. Baba had told us that we are selected and designated as the instruments for him to take out the force of Maya. Is that right? Is it not right, or it is right? It is right, yeah? Now you may look at yourself and say, no, maybe he has made some mistake or something. Because you look at yourself and you see that probably if you're being really truthful and realistic, the idea of you taking out the force of negativity that exists within the world seems quite outrageous. Is that true? And so then you kind of forget about that part and you think, well, you know, Baba's very loving and, you know, he is the destroyer, and but he says, no, you are Vighan Vinashak. This is one of the titles that Baba has given us. Do you know this word, Vighan Vinashak? It means the destroyer of obstacles. So when a warrior is training, in the training setup, they always are having to face different kinds of obstacles which simulate the real battlefield so that you can become experienced. And so this is where we find in the everyday world of our Brahmin life that in many occasions we experience different kinds of tests. And sometimes we think, oh, this should not be happening. But when we think this should not be happening, it's because we haven't understood something very important. And that is that we need to have these simulations so that we can actually acquire the experience and the expertise to handle a variety of situations. And so within the context of our own mind, our own body, the Brahman family, our immediate everyday life, we are given many varieties of tests, and those tests are, as Baba mentioned many times, the purpose of a test is so that you can be experienced. And the instruments that you use to become experienced are partly your weapons, your different eight powers, because the tests that you have to face them. You have to accommodate, you have to tolerate, you have to be able to cooperate with anyone and everyone who needs to be cooperated with, regardless of whether they are polite to you or not polite to you or whatever, whether you want to or you don't want to. The power to cooperate is very important. To get beyond the ego, which says, I won't cooperate. Because why should I, you see? If we have ego, or if we nurture our ego, then it will be said that we are not wise. So a person who nurtures their ego, they are considered childish. And so if you're childish, then that's also not considered wise. But wise is connected with this idea of being mature, being experienced, having been around the block a few times, and really you have understood. So wisdom is something that is acquired after having passed a number of tests, and many times you will get similar tests, because each and every one of us has areas where we're especially strong. Just as in the Lokic world, the warriors, when they come into their force, to be ready for combat, they come with existing specialities, which make it easier for them during their training and during their combat, but then they have other areas where they're weak. And so in those areas, they have to really work hard to bring all of their skills, their skill set, up to a level where they are good in all the areas. So the same thing applies to us, the Shurvira, the great warriors, also called Mahavir. And you know that Mahavir is also a word that was given to Brahma Baba. And Brahma Baba says many times that he is in the front line in the battle against Maya, and any test which comes to any of the children first of all comes to Baba. And this is why also Baba has told us that the life story of Brahma Baba is the encyclopedia for us. Because if there's any difficulty that we experience, any particular problem that we may have, either with our own mind or our emotions, our feelings, our weakness of the physical body, our inability to be disciplined, or our difficulties with the Brahmin family or with the world or financially or any other type of difficulties that we may have, we can look up that difficulty in the biography of Brahma Baba and we can find out how he handled that. Now, many people will say, well, we don't have that kind of encyclopedia. And this is one of the reasons why we are here in Madhuban, because here is where we have access to the people who will tell you the stories. And at 7:30, Daddy Jenki is going to come and talk to us. And generally speaking, she will include in her classes some or other stories about Brahma Baba, about her relationship with Brahma Baba and how she learned certain things. And by learning these things and applying these things, this is how you become a Dadi or a Dada. And there's one little story I'll tell you which comes from Dadi Prakash Mani. One day someone had asked Dadi, how do you become Bara? Bara means a senior. So a senior in Hindi is called Bara, somebody who's big, important, old, like that. Now Bara is also, has another meaning. And if you can sometimes in Hindi, you can put a V where there's a B. And so Bara is a special kind of food, which is very tasty. And it's a speciality of South India, which you sometimes will experience here. And this is called sometimes Dahivara. So maybe on the 18th of January, you may get that in your Brahma Bhojan here, or on Diwali, or something like this. So how do you become Bara? Well, first of all, you have to be out in the sun for months, in the blazing sun, just getting baked and heated up. And you have to endure that blazing sun, because that's how the urad dal, which bara is made of, that's how it gets ripe. And then it'll get harvested. So harvesting means you get cut down and beaten. And so this also, you pass through that experience, and then after that you get soaked in cold water. And then after that you're put in the grinder and you get ground up, so you become a nice smooth paste. And then mixed with a little chili, you get dropped in boiling oil, and then you sizzle a bit, and then you get pulled out of that and dropped in cold water, then squeezed, and then dropped in yoga, then you're ready to eat. And so Dadi Prakashmani used to tell this story when anyone would say, why do I have to go through this, that, or the other different type of experience which is difficult to manage? And really it is that we must be ready to adjust ourselves in any circumstances so that we can actually develop the practical use of the powers. You see, for the warriors in the Lokik, if they want to develop competency in the use of their weapons, they are put in different kinds of training where they're actually simulating the reality to such an extent that they really need to be good with their aim, fast, think on your feet, adjust. When the situation doesn't go the way you want, then you have to quickly create a plan B or a plan C. And you also have to work very well with your other people in your team, because a warrior never operates alone. The warriors operate in teams. And in the same way, if we do not have the power to cooperate, then we cannot be a team to handle the different ways in which Maya wishes to take down the godly army and maintain its kingdom in the Iron Age. And Maya doesn't like BKs, because BKs means end of Maya. So we have to be wise enough to understand that Maya is not going to go away without a fight. Maya is not going to say, okay, it's your turn, thank you very much, I'll go away. It doesn't work like that, you see. And then Baba had said, well, you know, very important in a warrior is not to be afraid. And how to not be afraid, two things. One is you have to be very, very convinced of your success. And so Baba has told us, well, victory is your godfatherly birthright. This is a slogan which has been around for the longest time. And we need to be very sure that, well, I may lose a few battles here and there, but I'm no way going to lose the war. So if you do get taken out or taken down, that doesn't matter. What matters is you stand up again, you see. And so for that, a very wise thing is not to dwell upon the fact that you failed or you weren't able to come through the way you hoped or whatever. The very, very important thing is to use the different slogans Baba has given. Okay, past is past. Let it go. do not think about it. Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and get going again. This is very, very important. This is wisdom. You see. And always remember, I'm not a body, I'm a soul, I'm immortal. So it doesn't matter how many times I fall down, I'm still immortal. But the act of picking oneself up and not bothering about what happened is a very good aspect of wisdom. When we get a success, we enjoy that success, but sometimes we don't really learn very much from that success. Sometimes even our success can go to our head, and we can become arrogant about our success because I'm successful, so what's the problem? But when we fail, then wisdom says, well, take a look and see, where did you fail? How did you fail? What did you do that brought about this failure? To what extent did you use the excuse that it's somebody else's fault, or it wasn't fair, or it was injustice, or any of these different approaches that we can give in order to make ourselves seem to be not responsible for what happened. Wisdom says, whatever happens to me in areas where I fall down, it is a very good idea for me to take personal responsibility for that. Because then, when I analyze what happened, it's possible to actually pinpoint the area where I, the soul, am weak or was weak. And Shurveer, the invincible warrior, is the one who builds up this invincibility or this inviolability by making sure that any chinks in the armor or any lack of capacity in the use of the weapons is made up by extra practice in that area. You see. Because wherever the warrior is weak, then during the training, the warrior will reinforce that area. One of the things that Baba has told us is that we need to be equal in all the areas. So in the last Murali, Baba talked to us about the treasures of Gyan, Yoga, Dharana, and the Confluence Age. And the Confluence Age, the treasure of time, means we need to understand the nature of time. It's not enough to just know what the Gyan is, practice yoga, and inculcate divine virtues. We need to understand how time is operating. And time, Dadi Jenki was saying to someone today, you really need to understand that time now is such that it demands certain things from you, because what we're going through is delicate times. Time is short, which means that the time we have available to us in order to accomplish something is a very small window. So one of the things we need to be able to do is what Baba calls fast effort. So fast effort means when we have arrived at a window of time in which we have an opportunity, then we have to be rapid to discern with our power of discernment what's happening. What is time showing me? What is time telling me? And there is this expression, seize the time, which means it's something to do with opportunity. Now, in Greek mythology, there is a deity, the deity of Kairos time. Kairos time is different from Chronos time. Chronological time means, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, this type of time. But the image in the Greek mythology of Kairos is a young boy who is naked and who appears and disappears again very quickly. And he has nothing except a lot of hair. So there are three possibilities. One thing with this deity, Kairos, is he appears, passes by, and you don't even see him. Then, so there's no use. And the second one is he appears, you see him, you do nothing. So that's also missed opportunity. And the third possibility is you see him, you grab him by the hair. That means you seized the time, you took the opportunity, and you carried yourself forward by recognizing the opportunity and using it. Sometimes Baba gives us blessings, and he says blessings have to be used. They have to be applied in the right time. And so this is also something we must do in our Brahman life, that whatever happens, when something comes along, we have to be able to recognize the opportunity, which is a little window of time that allows us to usually transcend some particular area where we are weak. And these windows of opportunity only come occasionally. We know what our weaknesses are because we check ourselves on a regular basis. And if we check ourselves carefully, we can see that our weaknesses come in different categories. There are some weaknesses that exist because we're lazy, and so they're very easy to sort out. Some weaknesses exist because we do not apply the disciplines in the way that we should. And so we expose ourselves to a progressive weakening process where we are a little casual in some of the different dharanas. And the consequences of that is that your study is a little casual, your punctuality is a little casual, your Amrit Vela, your evening meditation, these are fudged, and you miss the right time discipline. And this weakens you because it creates a sanskar, I see. And then this can create a feeling of, well, you know, I'm not one of those guys who are ahead. I don't have the opportunity or whatever. But it's really because of fudging on some of the disciplines. So a good warrior in his training, he will be very attentive to the disciplines, and the trainers will be very attentive on calling attention to the warrior if they are slack in their disciplines, and they will force them to get it right. Otherwise, you're not in the fighting force. Can't be used. Then there is the category of weaknesses where whatever you do, it doesn't work. Have you got some of those? Yeah? And these are very difficult ones. And I think that if we take care of all the other issues that are to do with casualness and laziness and so on, then what we have left is just those particularly resistant weaknesses. And I think that wisdom is when we reinforce ourselves all around those areas so that you're able to focus your attention on that area. And this is where I think it comes back to this thing of applying the discipline of not giving sorrow and not taking sorrow. Sorrow is something you experience in your mind. And Dadi was telling me that Baba had given her a blessing on the 17th of January through Dadi Gulzar. And the blessing was, you hold the string of your mind. Now, generally speaking, we don't think of our mind as something on a string. But Baba had given this image of your mind being something on a string. So what would be on a string? You see, maybe something like a kite. So the kite, you want it to fly high in the sky. It's very beautiful. If you've ever been to any place where there are a lot of Chinese, you see there's also a lot of kites. They like kites. And here on the 14th of January, they fly kites a lot. So the kite, there's also another thing which you see in the Gita, and that is that in the chariot of Arjuna, he has a flag on a flagpole which is 3 miles high. Now, you can imagine passing under a bridge with that. But this is also rather like a string, you know, and this string which has this flag 3 miles high, and what's on the flag is Hanuman carrying a mountain. And this flag represents your aim. And what you wish to be, how you will feel comfortable about yourself, is defined as your aim. You know, you want to be true to yourself. You want to be authentic. You want to be Lakshmi Narayan. You want to be a good BK, a good yogi. Whatever way you define that to yourself, this vision of yourself, this is in your mind. And you hold this in your mind, and then your actions and your responses to the various different circumstances, including your different tests, these will be a sort of barometer that let you know to what extent you are actually living up to your aim, or actually living and demonstrating that, yes, this which is in your flag, that which is in your mind, or the kite of your mind, that is a reality, that you are heading that way and you are going to become that. And now, when you hold the mind, the string of the mind in your hand, this thing that holds the mind, this is called the intellect. And the intellect is another way of putting the intellect. It can be the will, or it can be the impact of your personal discipline, you see. So with your personal discipline, you actually make your mind experience and give you feedback that what you think you are, you actually are. Now, what happens when you experience something and you take sorrow from it? Then how you see yourself plunges 3 miles below the ocean, I would say. And you go into something like a depression because you fail yourself. Do you experience that? Yes? No? You wouldn't admit it. But it happens. Or you defend yourself by attacking someone else. I see. So when you give sorrow, it's when you're defending your frail and fragile ego by attacking someone else. And if you feel, well, no, I shouldn't attack anybody else, then you have to do something with that negative energy, and so that you will turn it against yourself, and you put yourself into a frame of mind which is quite dark and depressed, and you will be in the dark clouds. And both of these is because of being hit by the circumstance that makes you feel vulnerable, or that hurt you. And what did it hurt? It didn't hurt you, because you're a soul. Souls don't get hurt. But what gets hurt is the ego. So the ego gets activated. And then it either gives sorrow or it takes sorrow. And the whole purpose of our training, the whole purpose of all of the study that we're doing and the acquisition of powers is for us to be able to be egoless. And one of the five forms Baba is asking us to achieve is the angelic form. And the angelic form is light. It doesn't have any resistance. It can't be hurt. It's really very beautiful stage of egolessness. And sometimes Baba equates the angelic form with the stage of being the instrument and the one who has humility. And so humility can only occur when the ego is gone. And when the ego is gone, how does the ego melt? It can melt, it can get cut, it can get hit down. There's different expressions for dealing with the ego. But melting is an important one. And Baba had told us very recently to be merged in love. And Baba also talks about the fire of love. The alloy in the soul gets into the soul due to the passion of the vices, especially anger and lust. These are called passions. And in anger and lust, the soul gets impregnated with impurity, and it can't come out until the soul merges in the pure passion of love for Baba. And this fire of love for Baba will actually extract the alloy. And the alloy, when it's extracted, that also removes the ego. When the soul is pure, golden, very soft, and it will not be resistant or rigid, but very soft. Anything that will come to that golden piece, it just will bend, and it doesn't have any problem with different types of impacts. Very, very soft, pure gold. And the other analogy that Baba gives for this stage is the diamond. And the diamond is very hard. It can't be broken. And the diamond is completely transparent. Doesn't matter how thick it is, you can see right through it. And so where there is ego, where there is lack of humility, there's something in the way. You see. So the diamond, you become a diamond, which is carbon, from the Iron Age coal. Kali Yuga is also the Black Age, the age of coal, where the soul becomes coal, and it dirties everything it touches, and it doesn't have that much value, it's extremely combustible, so very reactive. But when you subject that coal to enough pressure and enough heat, it transforms to a diamond. So wisdom, I think, is to seize the moments of time where you have an opportunity to transform, to realize, to transform the self, and to actually melt in the fire of love. Because if something is happening which the mind normally would react to very much, then the key to that is to immediately go to Baba in love. When you go to Baba in love, then you're not on the same plane as the activities that are going on around you, which are provoking an ego reaction, or which are causing you to think that you're getting hurt, so that you either have to give sorrow or take sorrow. Now, when you are experiencing being merged in love of Baba, anything may be going on around you to give you sorrow or whatever, but you will not feel it because you're merged in love with Baba. Why can we not instantly jump to that stage of being merged in love with Baba? Is because we get too preoccupied with the different activities of drama that are going on down here in the material world. So Baba has told us it is a predestined drama, and everything that's going on is anyway predestined. So if you think it should be or shouldn't be there, then you haven't understood. But once you know it's a predestined drama, there's certain implications of that. And one of them is that you can sort of take off from the drama, move yourself from being one who is caught up in experiencing the drama to allowing the drama to be exactly what it is, because anyway it's like that every 5,000 years, it's been like that forever, and it's going to be like that forever in the future. So these are the moments to really lift the self into that experience of being merged in love with Baba. For that, we have to have all relations with Baba. Because if we don't have all relations with Baba, then we will think about a relationship in the world. So if there is some soul performing a role for which we take sorrow, and we take sorrow, then it means we are in relation with that soul. And that's not what Baba has told us. He has said, it's a role. Baba has given us a promise, I am always with you. So I am always with you means, it's just a thought away. Sometimes Baba says, you can perform your role in the combined form. So whenever you are in a combined form with Baba, so you can think of a combined form in a number of different ways. So one way is something which is combined with something else. You can put yourself inside Baba, so that Baba is then the shell around you, and you are on the inside of Baba. That's a form of combination, right? So whenever there is any role going on, then that role is in a way interacting with that shell, which is Baba, and you are inside that, so it's not happening to you. And so therefore, the question of giving and taking sorrow doesn't arise, because you have Baba in between you and the event. There are many, many different yuktis Baba has taught us, and as we move forward So we can use some yuktis to protect ourselves. We can use other yuktis to reinforce ourselves. But whatever it is, wisdom is to be effectively immune to the karmas of other people. Sometimes Baba has said, during your 63 births of the Copper Age and Iron Age, you have been in interaction with humans, with nature, and you have built up karmic accounts because of direct interaction with souls. And your relationship with God has been indirect. So indirect action means that it's not very strong. So in the confluence age, during this time of the confluence age, the key has been have direct action with Baba through having all relations with Baba. And Baba will never give sorrow to the soul. And then indirect action with people. Because people are playing their predestined roles. They have to play those roles. That's the way they are. And I, the soul, have my karma direct with Baba. And indirect with people. In that way, this strongly reduces the circumstances where the soul will accumulate the debt of impure karma or karmic accounts or taking and giving sorrow with people. So I think the key that Baba's asking us, that Baba's offering us, be so in love with the father, the mother, the teacher, the satguru, the friend, the companion, that whatever is going on in the world is something that's happening to you really very indirectly. And the more you are with Baba, handling all these things, the more the powers accumulate within you, and the more you are able to be the expert warrior, and then Baba moves the force of his light through your face, and this is the thing that takes away the Maya. So a few thoughts about wisdom. And so with that, Om Shanti.